This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 14th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 426. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, political football in Vancouver. First, with 6 months to go, the head of Vancouver City Hall's FIFA World Cup host committee met the media. Plus, freedom of information is no longer free at Vancouver City Hall. Mayor Ken Sims' ABC majority put up a paywall with less than a year until the civic election. Plus, Sim gave the MLS Cup runner-up Vancouver Whitecaps a consolation prize. The inside track to build a stadium at Hastings Racecourse. But how much will it cost and who will pay for it? This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Officials from Vancouver City Hall, planning for 7 FIFA World Cup matches next June and July, showed off the $24 million Killarney Park Training Centre on December 8th. That is where Australia, Belgium, Egypt, New Zealand, Qatar, and Switzerland will make final preparations for matches at BC Place Stadium, which is undergoing more than $100 million of renovations. The Breaker asked Jesse Adcock, the leader of the host city committee, about how neighbors around BC Place, the Peony Fan Festival, and the Killarney Training Centre will be assisted if they are negatively impacted.
There's no specific compensation, Bob, around that. But what we are doing is we're working with all of the businesses in the adjacent areas. And the Boston Pizza that you cited, for example, is going to be open. And in fact, I would argue maybe benefit from all of the foot traffic that's going to be in that area. We're working really hard to make sure that the businesses on Robson and Beattie Street are adjacent are able to function. We have people that have been, dropping postcards, we've been doing online information sessions, we've been reaching out to neighborhoods, we've been reaching out to strata groups, we've been reaching out to building managers, Hospitality Industry Association, Hotel Association, and what we're trying to do is, we've used the 2 to 3 years that we've had to kind of, as much as we can, create an awareness of what the match schedules are, where the impacts are, what days the biggest impact will be. And again, I can confirm that we are not asking any businesses to close. We're not displacing anybody. There will be match day road closures, and those are really about safety and security. And you just have to look at a Netflix documentary to see sort of what we're trying to prevent here in Vancouver, because at the end of the day, if we're going to deliver a world-class sporting event, and hopefully not our last, and shows that we just keep leveling up event after event, we need to show that we're able to show up and keep people safe, deliver that world-class experience. So that is really the goal.
And on sponsorship, FIFA does have the new packages, the regional packages for the host cities, the host city champions and supporters packages. Yep. How are those going in terms of sales? How many have been sold from either category, and who are those companies so far?
So what I can tell you is that each one of the 16 cities has an opportunity to sell 10 supporter slots in each jurisdiction. We are still in the middle of all of those sales conversations. We're working, obviously you know this, we're working with in conjunction with the Pavco team to support us there. As of yet, I have nothing to announce with respect to supporters that have, let's say, cross the finish line on a deal. We have a number of donors that we're working with as well, and these are folks that are not one of those official supporters, but they are, organizations and groups and individuals across the city that really want the success for us. And so this commercial program, what it does is it allows the host committee to raise revenue to offset the event costs. So this is revenue that's coming in through the assets that only host committees are allowed to acquire through FIFA. And so all of that now is in progress. Admittedly, we didn't know the teams until 24 hours ago. So, now that we know the teams and we know the match dates, now is when we expect that we will be able to kind of move from, I would say, more, broad conversations and into the specific refined answers that you're looking for. But again, up until this point, it's been a lot of variables missing, and now the calculus can take place.
Is there a deadline for those programs? Could you sell right up until the first match here, June 13th?
My understanding is that we could sell right up until the initial match. I can share with you this, that, you know, when I just came from the draw last night. I had been there working, and we were able to meet with some of the teams right away. We met with one of the team CEOs, and, you know, he had mentioned that their local fan base that travels and has the intent to travel is in the tens of thousands. And so these are folks that are coming from one of these drawn countries along with their teams to the countries where they're going to be playing. So I think what we're going to see now unfolding in the next, you know, 30, 60, 90 days is really those trip planning pieces to take place, and people now able to commit to which cities they're going to, which plane tickets they're buying, which hotels they're booking.
And just a quick revenue and expenses question.
Yeah.
What is the budget for your office specifically, the Secretariat at City Hall, and what is the latest figure for revenue from the regional major revenue destination tax that's supposed to help pay for this?
Yeah, so I don't have those numbers on me, and you probably know that I wouldn't have had them on me. I can tell you that we're a team of about 35 people. We're a team of 35 people who are working really hard to put this event on. And if you can go back and compare that to the team sizes of other major sporting events, which is information that people can see, you'll see that that is, like, in comparison, a relatively smaller number than other major sporting events. We're putting on the largest event that's ever come to Vancouver, and we're doing it as a group project using resources that we have already. And so the commitment towards, like, cost containment, cost management, and using the commercial program to offset revenues, I can tell you that we're really focused on that, and we're really committed to making sure that this is a really, really efficient, effective event. And so we're trying to do this to the best of our abilities.
8 months after the Breaker.News told you that the Vancouver Whitecaps wanted to build a new stadium inside Hastings Racecourse, the club's CEO, Axel Schuster, went to City Hall to confirm with Mayor Ken Sim that negotiations are underway. They held a joint news conference on December 11th, almost a week after Great Canadian Gaming said that horse racing was cancelled after more than 125 years at Hastings Park. The Whitecaps have played at BC Place Stadium downtown since 2011 under favorable rent terms. The club did not contribute to the $563 million project to build a retractable roof. It is not contributing to the $109 million renovation for the FIFA World Cup. So the big question at City Hall, how much will this cost taxpayers? Here is Mayor Ken Sim and Whitecaps CEO Axel Schuster.
Are the Whitecaps going to pay for the stadium, or is the city going to contribute? Can you give us some more details on what that looks like?
Yeah, I want to be very clear. So the MOU, it basically states that the city will, you know, we're going to enter into negotiations. So we've identified the site. We will enter into negotiations to get a fair market value lease. It's really up to the Whitecaps and their partners to come up with a plan and finance that plan.
Hi, Ben Milger, CTV News. First question is for Axel. And what would a potential budget for this stadium potentially encompass? To make it tenable, would you be looking for assistance from any level of government, municipal, provincial, or federal, whether that's in the form of actual cash injection or tax breaks? How do you make it work?
Also, this is a question that I don't want to answer at this point, because we will now speak with all the other partners, and we don't negotiate in the public and we don't ask questions in the public. I can only speak or can say we have to make this whole piece workable, and it cannot only be the stadium. We're speaking about more than the stadium, because everyone can make the easy math. If you have to build a stadium in Vancouver, and it's only the stadium, then the cost of building a stadium as a private organization will not put you in a financial better situation than we are now if you look into the cost and that you have to pay off this cost. So we have to develop a whole plan around this, and we have to find partners who are interested in partnering with us on this to make it workable.
Report number two, amendments to Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Bylaw number 11451.
City of Vancouver led the province with a Freedom of Information Law way back in 1982, a decade before the provincial government, thanks to the efforts of 1976 elected City Councillor Marguerite Ford. But Mayor Ken Sim and his ABC majority took the free out of Freedom of Information on December 9th. That is when they voted 6-2 to charge a $10 tax on each Freedom of Information request. They adopted the controversial law passed by the NDP government in 2021. The Canadian Association of Journalists says the $10 charge is wrong. Governments that charge the application fee put secrecy ahead of scrutiny. Cope Councillor Sean Orr and One City's Lucy Maloney voted no. Green Councillor Pete Fry abstained. ABC's Brian Montague and Vote Vancouver's Rebecca Bly were both absent. I was among the citizens who spoke against the proposal. But first, here is Access and Privacy Director at City Hall, Kobe Falconer.
We're probably going to reach approximately 1,000 requests this year, which is a record breaker for us. So as of 2021, the FIPA regulation allowed us to charge a $10 fee. It was the city's position at that time to not charge an FOI administration fee of $10.
So what does the cost derive from for people putting in a request?
It doesn't cost anything to submit a request at the city. There is no administrative fee to date. Anything over 3 hours is $30 per hour. So the first 3 hours are free.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Orr.
Yeah, thank you. I just want a question around consultation, noting that, you know, we had a letter today from the Canadian Association of Journalists. Were they consulted with before this, or is this sort of a unilateral kind of approach?
No, journalists were not consulted on this matter.
Okay, thanks. That's all my questions.
Our first public speaker is Robin Tavender.
The Department of Labor standards doesn't operate on a cost recovery basis. So if someone is being mistreated by a public or private employer, although most public employees, of course, are covered by collective agreements and paid more than the minimum wage, the idea that they would have to, like, operate on a cost recovery basis is silly. The Supreme Court has said information rights are quasi-constitutional. This sort of taxation is regressive.
Speaker number three, Susan Boltwood.
The city is asking council to charge a $10 application fee for freedom of information requests. This might sound modest. It is not. In theory, a $10 fee seems reasonable. In practice, as detailed in our organization's latest documentation, this motion arrives at a precise moment when the city's Freedom of Information Office has become a vessel of obstruction rather than transparency.
Speaker number five is Mayeli Alvarez.
Although today I am speaking on behalf of myself to speak out against this proposed barrier to our right in this supposed democratic city.
So speaker two, please, Bob Mackin, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, and my apologies for the technical error. Yes, Bob Mackin, editor of the Breaker.News, not a Vancouver resident, but two-thirds of my audience is in Vancouver. I oppose this motion, and I propose a remedy. Christmas is a season of giving, but today you could take away. Like the Grinch that stole Christmas, is this how the city council stole transparency? Please don't make me write that headline. Last week, I asked the Information and Privacy Commissioner, Michael Harvey, for his reaction to the staff proposal to charge this $10 tax. This is what he said. Quote, at a time of declining trust in public institutions and the rapid spread of misinformation and disinformation, public bodies need to recognize the fundamental importance of access rights in our democracy and bolster their FOI systems, not erect barriers, financial or otherwise, that may inhibit it. Secrecy breeds disinformation, extremism, waste, and corruption. Transparency breeds trust and confidence. There is an election next October. Voters have the right to know more, not less. Citizens own City Hall. They already paid for the information to be created and held. There is no good reason to put City Hall behind a $10 paywall. Vancouver's 1982 FOI law predates the provincial law by a decade. Councillor Marguerite Ford, elected in 1976, was the mother of FOI in BC. But in a 2015 Vancouver Sun interview, Marguerite Ford expressed disappointment. Quote, it is very hard to get any information out of City Hall, and I think it is deliberate. They just don't want you to know what is going on. The fact that individual employees can't even talk to the public is appalling. End quote. In January 2022, Vancouver City Council unanimously passed a motion called Supporting Local Journalism and its impact on civic democracy. Council affirmed that, quote, a healthy professional news media is essential to the proper functioning of democracy in our city and in municipalities across the country, end quote. The author of that motion, Councillor Kirby Young, who is now Deputy Mayor Kirby Young. So thank you, Deputy Mayor, for that motion. But now is the time for Council to put those words into action. Send this report back to staff. Find out how many people work in the department. What is the budget? Can they do their job differently, more efficiently? The FOI law says in Section 71 that public bodies must increase proactive disclosure. Vancouver has taken some steps, but it needs to take leaps. Most importantly, consult the public and consult FOI user groups. Then come back to Council in the spring with a plan to make Vancouver the most transparent city in Canada. Censorship costs taxpayers money. Publishing saves taxpayers money. Be like the Grinch at the end of the story. Remember, quote, his small heart grew three sizes that day, and then the true meaning of Christmas came through, and the Grinch found the strength of 10 Grinches plus two, end quote. Thank you for your time.
And Bob, thank you for that holiday cheer. Okay, so that passes with Councillor Bly absent, Councillor Fry abstaining, and Councillors Orr and Maloney in opposition. So we will now go back to the main motion as amended.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In FocusTaiwan.tw, U.S. climber Alex Honnold to free solo Taipei 101 on January 24th. Accounting for the time difference, the two-hour broadcast of Honnold's climb, titled Skyscraper Live, will air on January 23rd in the United States, Netflix said in a news release. Honnold, 40, was the first person ever to free solo climb the 900-meter El Capitan rock formation in Yosemite National Park, a feat that was recorded and later made into the 2018 documentary film Free Solo. At 508 meters, Taipei 101 was the tallest building in the world when it was completed in 2004. It is now the world's 11th tallest building, though it remains the tallest building in Taiwan. A 728-ton mass damper keeps the tower stable. It's like a pendulum, and it is from a company called RWDI in Ontario. In 2014, Honnold was the first free solo climber of the University Wall at the Squamish Chief in BC. In ABC News Australia, Queensland hospitals treating five people with e-scooter injuries every day. More than 1,600 people ended up in hospital between January and October of this year. Men aged between 24 and 35 were the most likely cohort to be hospitalized with e-scooter injuries. Children under the age of 16 account for around 25%. Researchers want the government to mandate full-face helmets for those riding stand-up scooters. In Hong Kong Free Press, Taipo fire. Scaffolding nets must pass laboratory tests before use, Hong Kong government says. Secretary for Development Bernadette Lin said that the government would conduct random checks on the flammability of scaffolding netting. Secretary for Security Chris Tang said that 7 out of 20 safety net samples from Wong Fuk Court, housing estate in Taipo, did not pass fire safety tests. The blaze has killed at least 160 people so far and displaced around 2,000 households. Six people remain missing. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, how exotic dancers became some of the biggest donors of toys to Dornbecker Children's Hospital. In the strip club capital of the country, one of the most effective ways to collect toys for charity, it turns out, is to invite exotic dancers and burlesque performers to jiggle all the way. Over the past 14 years, the stage show Tatas for Toys has donated an estimated $183,000 worth of toys. In Cascadia Daily News, for Skagit Valley tulip farmers, flooding is a wait-and-see game. It's certainly predicted to be something none of us have seen in our lifetime. The Skagit Valley Tulip Festival is a major economic driver for the region, bringing in more than 600,000 tourists and millions of dollars in revenue each year, yet all participating tulip farms are located within the 100-year floodplain. This is Tulip Valley's fourth growing season, and its bulbs are currently in their winter dormancy stage. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. Watch exclusive footage of Vancouver police, firefighters, and paramedics gearing up for World Cup. And 7 things I learned from Vancouver's FIFA World Cup 26 host committee. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Lower Mainland Christmas Bureau and all the people behind the annual Pan Pacific Christmas Wish Breakfast on December 10th. You can still help to put a gift under the tree for a needy child. Go to lmcb.ca to find out how. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar? Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 14th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 14th of December in 1939, the League of Nations expelled the Soviet Union for invading Finland? The Winter War lasted until March 1940. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca and bobmackin.substack.com. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com. Until next week.